Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 17, Verse 5. Kastva mat sarane loke. Bala dhamsya balan bali. Nara dev osi veshena. Natavada karma nadvijaha. Translation. Oh, who are you? You appear to be strong, and yet you dare kill within my protection those who are helpless. By your dress, you pose yourself to be a godly man or a king, but by your deeds, you are opposing the principles of the twice-born Kshatriyas. Purport. The Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas are called twice-born because for these higher castes, classes of men, there is one birth by parental conjugation. There's another birth of cultural rejuvenation by spiritual initiation from the bona fide acharya or spiritual master. So a kshatriya is also twice born, like a brahmana, and his duty is to give protection to the helpless. The kshatriya king is considered to be the representative of God to give protection to the helpless and chastise the miscreants. Whenever there are anomalies in this routine work by the administrators, there is an incarnation of the Lord to reestablish the principles of a godly kingdom. In the age of Kali, the poor helpless animals, especially the cows, which are meant to receive all sorts of protection from the administrative heads, are killed without restriction. Thus, the administrative heads under whose noses such things happen are representatives of God in name only. Such powerful administrators are rulers of the poor citizens by dress or office, but factually they are worthless, lower class men without the cultural assets of the twice born. No one can expect justice or equality of treatment from once-born, spiritually uncultured, lower-class men. Therefore, in the age of Kali, everyone is unhappy due to the maladministration of the state. The modern human society is not twice-born by spiritual culture. Therefore, the people's government, by the people who are not twice-born, must be a government of Kali, in which everyone is unhappy. Translation, oh, who are you? You appear to be strong, and yet you dare kill within my protection those who are helpless. By your dress, you pose yourself to be a godly man or king, but by your deeds, you are opposing the principles of the twice-born Kshatriyas. So Kali is dressed like a king, but his actions show the opposite, because he is killing or at least harming those who are helpless. And the real duty of the king is represented here by Parikshit, who says, Mat Sharane, they're under my shelter. So that is the duty of the king. He shelters all of the living entities, and he has to protect them. Bali, or Kali personified, is not doing this. He is attacking the helpless animals, the cow and the bull. And therefore we have this discrepancy in the world. Parikshit addresses him as Advija. Dvija means twice born. Ja means to be born. Dvi is twice. So Dvija, twice born. Of course, it also means a bird. But anyway, here it means the twice born persons in the Varnashram system who are the upper classes. So the Vaishyas, Kshatriyas, and Brahmanas are called Dvija, twice born, and the Sudras are not twice born. And here the Sudra addressed as the king, he is going beyond his qualification and acting like a twice born, but he is actually Advija, not twice born. So in the purport, the Prabhupada explains this, that what this birth, why we call it twice born. So all human beings are born by the normal means from the womb of a mother. So that's the first birth. In the Varnashram system, they have another birth for Vaishyas, Kshatriyas, and Brahmanas. The Sudras are not qualified for that birth. Only the three upper classes are qualified. So this is the ceremony by which the child becomes qualified to study the Vedas. So that ceremony is one of the samskars among the many samskars of life. It's one of the important ones by which you take your second birth. So this ceremony is also called Upanayanam, which literally means to lead closely, Upa. Nayana means to lead closely. So the ceremony is to lead you towards spiritual life or towards the Supreme Lord, ultimately, because it qualifies you to study the Vedas, and the Vedas lead you to Supreme Lord. So this is a ceremony that is supposed to be carried out by all persons of the upper Varnas, usually when they are 5 years old or 7 years old. And it's a Vedic ceremony using Vedic mantras. And it's a set ceremony also. It's written in many scriptures. The exact details of the ceremony are given. And through this ceremony, the child is given by his father, usually, the Brahma Gayatri mantra. And that acts as the stimulus for him to be second born. And once he gets that mantra, then he's qualified for beginning the study of the Vedas. So in other words, he becomes a brahmachari through this ceremony, being twice born. The mantra, because the father is giving the son a mantra, then this is a form of diksha. And the child is supposed to chant this mantra three times a day at the sandhyas, early morning, noon, and evening. And it's usually followed and accompanied by a ceremony using Vedic mantras that is called Sandhya Vandana, offering respects to the Sandhya. So you chant Vedic mantras to purify yourself, to worship the sun. Do a few tarpanas to the pitras, etc. You call the Gayatri mantra as avahana. And then you chant your mantras maybe 10 times or 20 times or whatever you can do. And then you say goodbye to the deity Gayatri Devi, tell her to go back to the mountains, Himalaya mountains. And you offer some prayers, etc., and then you conclude. So it takes about half an hour or so to do that ceremony. So you're supposed to do that three times a day, and if you omit to do it, then you're considered very sinful and you go to hell. So then you have to do some extra ceremonies to get rid of that sin of missing chanting your Gayatri mantra. So this is a common feature of the twice born. And was supposed to be carried out when you're 5 years old and you go to the Gurukul. But we see traditionally, over even the last 500 years, even then they were not really following so properly. And only the Brahmanas generally were more strict in following these rules. And in many cases they would go to the Gurukul and learn the Vedas. And even if they didn't, at least they would do the minimum. They would at least chant the mantra three times a day, Sanjavanana. So then something at least was intact, at least 500 years ago. And that, of course, continued today. People born in Brahmin families, generally, this is what they do. They chant the mantra three times a day with Sanjha Vandana. I don't know how many, maybe half of them, or one quarter, I don't know. Generally, they don't get that education. So they get the mantra, but they don't get any education. No Vedic education, no Gurukul, nothing. And sometimes they make it abbreviation because each ceremony they have to call some brahmanas to do the ceremony, so they combine that with a marriage ceremony and they do it at once. you become a dvija, become a brahmachari, and then right after that you get married. Just to save money, the same priest can do both ceremonies and they do it all at once. this abbreviation there. So it was a traditional ceremony to make you twice, this is when you become twice born through the Brahma Gayatri Mantra. So it was a type of initiation into the Vedas. So that served as the original Diksha with the Diksha Guru, etc. But generally, it was not the father that did the teaching. They would then go off to the Gurukul and some other person would be the teacher who taught them the Vedas, etc. for 20 years or whatever, and they're supposed to come home. So that was, we can say, the mantra used, the Gayatri Mantra, Brahma Gayatri Mantra was the mantra used. And if we analyze that mantra, then it is actually a Vishnu mantra. So it's a Vaishnava mantra, a Vaishnava Gayatri. So this is how our acharyas explain it. Jiva Goswami has written a commentary on that Gayatri mantra, quoting from the Agni Purana, and there he refers to this mantra as a worship of Vishnu. So it's a meditation on Vishnu using a Vedic mantra. So it's a diksha into worship of Vishnu. Unfortunately, many people, they get the mantra and then they have other theories. It's a worship of the sun god, or it's worship of Shiva, whatever. They have all sorts of different theories about what who they're worshiping in this mantra. Originally it's a Vishnu mantra, but then it gets a little bit distorted as time goes on. And for many, it's just a ritual that they do to maintain their brahminical status, or whatever like that. So over time, it has lost its, let's say, potency as a Vaishnava mantra, and it more becomes a ritual just to show that you're a brahmana. therefore, it has an original spiritual import, but it's chanted by all upper-class people, and they may be worshipping devatas and Shiva and whatever. So it's not only Vaishnavas who get the mantra, everybody, and they're all worshipping different forms, devatas or the Supreme Lord. So it doesn't necessarily indicate a Vaishnava who gets this twice-born status. That is one type of initiation. However, we have Pancharatra initiation. So that has, for the Vaishnavas, that is given more prominence because this is definitely Vaishnava mantras and with a Vaishnava interpretation to them. So we may get Vishnu mantras, Krishna mantras, Narasimha mantras, or some form of the Lord, some mantras for worshipping the Supreme Lord. So this is a system within all the Vaishnava sampradayas. They get Vaishnava mantras. So this is separate from the Vedic initiation. That being twice born is another type of being twice born. Or sometimes we call it the third, the third birth. In this you get your mantras again, just as you get the Vedic Gayatri, you also get the Vaishnava Gayatri mantras and Vaishnava mantras for deity worship. So they're called Gayatris because of the meter. Gayatri is in a certain meter. So with a similar word, phrases we got in our Vaishnava Gayatri mantras, same number of syllables, and that's what it's called Gayatri, Vaishnava Gayatris, Krishna Gayatri, Narasimha Gayatri, etc. And these are used for worship and meditation. Vaishnava Sampradayas have Vaishnava Diksha. And this is the important element. You may have your other Brahminical Diksha or Dvija status, but you're not really a Vaishnava unless you get the Vaishnava Diksha. So that's the Pancharatrik Diksha. Now, the thing about Pancharatrik Diksha is that even if you're a Sudra or a Mlecha even, you could get the Vaishnava mantras. But you cannot get the Vedic mantras unless you were born. Nowadays, it's, if you're born in a Brahmin family, you get the mantra. If you're born in a Sudra family, you don't get, you can't get the mantra. So it's a little restrictive, because you're chanting Vedas and the Sudras cannot chant the Vedas. So it's restrictive. But the Vaishnava mantras, no. It's not restricted to any varna, particular varna. And beyond the varnas also, you can get these mantras. But to chant the mantras, you have to get the Diksha ceremony, go to the Vaishnava guru and get it, and then it's a secret mantra. So that's the Vaishnava, technically the Vaishnava Diksha. So therefore it operated independently of the Vedic Diksha. We see that Lord Chaitanya, when he was 5 years old or so, he got his Upanayanam Vedic Diksha, and then he started going to Sanskrit school, studying the Vedas and whatever like that. And then later on, but he wasn't a Vaishnava. And then he went to Gaya, he met his guru, he got his Diksha, and then he came back as a Vaishnava suddenly. So it was a separate, completely separate thing, a separate ceremony. So the Vaishnava gurus would initiate people independent of what happened with their childhood and family or whatever, and whatever Vedic Gayatri they got or didn't get. Vaishnava Diksha was completely separate at that time. So again, it is like a second birth in one sense, or a third birth in case you've already got a second birth. This is like a third birth. So therefore you get a name. That's like when you're born, you get a name. So when you get initiated, you get a name. In this way, you start your spiritual life. So this has taken prominence in the among the Vaishnavas over the Vedic Diksha, because it's definitely you're getting a specific Vaishnava mantra of that Sampradaya, and you continue that. So that's how Diksha takes place. So in this way, one begins spiritual life after the Diksha, because you don't have the mantra before that. And that Diksha mantra qualifies you for deity worship. So that's why we say, Prabhupada will say, that you can't go in the deity room unless you got second initiation, because you've got to get the mantras. So when you've got that Diksha, then you can go and worship the deities. You don't have that, you can't worship the deities. So there's a little bit of a distinction between devotees. So, pancharatrically speaking, that's correct. You can only be qualified by for deity worship by Vaishnava Diksha. And even if you were twice born, you're not qualified for worshipping our deities unless you got the Vaishnava Diksha. So in other words, this is superior to that. For us, that's superior to the other, the Vedic Diksha, or the twice born, being a twice born. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also took Diksha, but then he started a movement not based on deity worship. What is that movement? That movement is chanting the holy name, Nam Sankirtan. So this does not depend on Diksha at all, either Vedic Diksha or Vaishnava Diksha. Lord Chaitanya simply said, everybody can chant the holy name. And it's not secret, it's loud. We do it together in kirtan, so it's no secret about the Hare Krishna mantra, name of the Lord. It's public, not secret. So it doesn't require diksha or anything. It's open for everybody. So to do deity worship, you need the diksha mantras. To chant Hare Krishna, you just chant Hare Krishna. You don't need any pre-qualification in that sense. So this is also the Yuga Dharma. This is the method of spiritual advancement in Kali Yuga. So it does not need diksha. We tell people to chant Hare Krishna on the street. They don't take diksha. So in that sense, no diksha is required. So that's what is said in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It does not depend on diksha. It operates independently. However, we see that in our Sampradaya, they did take diksha as well. So they're doing two things. They're getting diksha, which qualifies them for deity worship. That's the Pancharatrik system. Plus, they're chanting Hare Krishna. It's not required diksha. So we're carrying out two sadhanas, in other words, deity worship plus Harinam. Of the two, we are supposed to emphasize the Harinam over the deity worship. This is, in other words, we are chanting Hare Krishna so many times a day. How much do we chant our deity mantras? Maybe three times a day for a few minutes each day. But we're chanting Hare Krishna much longer, concentrating on that. And when you get initiated, then your vow is chant 16 rounds a day, not chant your Gayatri mantras three times. 16 rounds of deity mantras, it says Hare Krishna. So there's an emphasis upon Harinam as the main deliverance for us in Kali Yuga. We do not reject deity worship. It's one of the five important angas of bhakti, and it's an assistant to Harinam. So the Vaishnavas, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, never gave up the diksha ceremony because we also do deity worship. But there's a emphasis upon the Harinam as the main deliverer. And it does not require the diksha guru to give it originally. What it does require is to chant properly, to get pure name, to get to prema, it does require shiksha. So therefore we do require association of devotees and a guru of some sort to give us shiksha so we can advance in our chanting. So it's not independent completely, it does require shiksha. And therefore we have to stay within the sampradaya and accept the shelter of a guru, not necessarily the diksha guru, shiksha guru to advance. In the meanwhile, we have that other Vedic Gayatri going on independently, not for sudras or malechas, but for upper class people. That went on independently in the among people. So like Lord Chaitanya got it when he was a child, other people got it also when they were children. That went on independently. With the coming of the new age, like modern age, there was a little bit of a challenge. Because the caste Brahmins said the Gaudiya Vaishnavas should not worship the deity unless they are twice born. So they imposed caste rules upon the Vaishnavas. And the Vaishnavas said, oh, we're free, we don't care about that. It's chant Hare Krishna. We don't care about caste, Muslims, anybody can chant Hare Krishna. But if you want to worship the deity, you have to do that. But technically speaking, not correct, because Pancharatra is also not dependent on varnas and ashramas. So even if you're a sudra or not, you can also worship the deity if you get the diksha. So anyway, the challenge was there. You should be brahmana in order to worship the deities. Not siddhantically correct, but that's what they said. So Bhakti Siddhanta went to one, they had a big gathering to discuss this topic, and they invited all the learned Vaishnavas, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas from Vrindavan and all in Bengal together, plus they invited all those smart pundits together to discuss what is the conduct of the Gaudiya Vaishnava. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur couldn't go there. So he sent Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and then he was allowed to speak for one time, a few hours like that. So he gave a very brilliant speech in which he concluded finally that the Vaishnava is superior to the twice born It's a whole different thing. So in other words, the twice-born status is a social status nowadays. It determines your varna, which is a social status. It doesn't in any way indicate your spiritual advancement at all. Simply getting the Vedic Gayatri Mantra, because it's, if you're born a Brahmin, then you get it. If you're born a Kshatriya, you get it. You're born a Vaishya, you get it. It's got nothing to do with the spiritual advancement at all. Of course, it's originally a spiritual mantra, but it's just a sign of social status that it distinguishes twice-born from non-twice-born. And the real spiritual advancement is your advancement as a Vaishnava, and if you get the Vaishnava mantras, then you are technically spiritually qualified. So his argument was this, based upon Bhagavatam. If you chant the holy name once purely, even the dog eater becomes qualified to do whatever a Brahmin can do. So this is the verse we quote to say that your prabdha karmas are destroyed by bhakti. So by meditating on the Lord or chanting his name, immediately the dog eater is qualified to do whatever a Brahmin can do. Of course, he's beyond the Brahmana, but he can do whatever the Brahmana can do because his karmas are all gone. He's no longer, doesn't have the karma of being born as a dog eater anymore. So therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta said, therefore, if you take the diksha, that means you are a Vaishnava and you have a certain standard of purity. Therefore, you're qualified to do whatever the Brahmana can do. And therefore, when he gave diksha, then he gave the Brahma Gayatri with the whole complete samskar, making his male devotees into brahmacharis. So they all line up, even if they're old men. And they would get Brahma Gayatri Mantra through the Upanayanam samskar, Vedic samskar with the fire sacrifice, etc. After they got there, Vaishnava Diksha. Right? So that's where we get our so-called Brahmana Diksha from. From that idea that the Vaishnava is superior to the Brahman and can do whatever he does. So but then they got the mantra, they got a thread, and then he said, okay, our Gaudiya Vaishnavas are superior, and we can do whatever the Brahmana can do. But it was basically a, let's say, a, as I said, a social, that Brahma Gayatri is more a social type of symbol, got a thread, okay, he's a Brahmana. It just means he's of that status where he's qualified to do certain things in the Varnashram system. So why we're so attached to that? Well, we aren't. It's just that he wanted to show that the Brahmana, that the Vaishnava is superior to the Brahmana, and therefore we can do whatever the Brahmana can do. So we shouldn't put a take it in any other way. So it's a sign to the caste brahmanas that we can do whatever you do. So in other words, social sign, nothing to do with the spiritual advancement as such. Originally it did, but later on, due to caste brahmanism, it didn't. So anyway, twice born ultimately should refer to the spiritual birth of a person, not the physical birth. And in the original Vedic system, that was so because when you got your second birth, then you did study the Vedas, and hopefully you got some spiritual inspiration from that to carry out your life in a spiritual way. With time, as I said, then gradually most of those people who got the Dvija status didn't even go to the Gurukul, very, very few. And in the present day, we find that, I don't know, of all the twice-born people, not even 1% go to a Gurukul, I think, at all. Maybe 0.01% or something, maybe go. And only the Brahmanas are that, a few Brahmanas, because they can't make a living out of that once they get out of the Gurukul. They become a Sanskrit scholar and a reciter of the Vedas. What can you do? All you can do is get work in a temple, possibly, most. So therefore, not very popular to go through that education nowadays. So therefore, it can't be taken as a sign of spiritual status at all. It's more of a social status symbol, that's all, a mark of that. So, this place is taken by Vaishnav Diksha, a Pancharatri Diksha, that's one. But then with Lord Chaitanya, then even that gets superseded by chanting the holy name. That's the real social status. Now, of course, we do try to measure people by their initiations, first initiation, second initiation, then if he's better than person without initiation. So that's maybe, in some sense, it's true because they're more serious. But on the other hand, the real advancement is the realization through chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Nam. That's the real status of advancement, which may be different in different people. They may progress at different rates, and it operates also independently of diksha, our diksha or Vaishnava diksha. So therefore we can use it as a convenience, a measure, but then it becomes something like a social status, just like with the brahmanas. If you got the thread, okay, he's a brahmana like this, so he's got diksha, he's a status like this. So we shouldn't fall too much into that mode of just labeling people based upon their externals, whatever. And at that, as I said, these are only they are not measures of how you chant Hare Krishna. That's diksha is only that you're chanting your Vaishnava mantras, that's all, which is not our main sadhana. So yeah, it may be a little bit misapplied to judge people based on that. So therefore, in Lord Chaitanya's movement, the emphasis is upon Harinam, the chanting of the holy name. That's the main sadhana, and that's the main way in which we get our advancement. So that's the main measurement of our success in devotional service, through chanting the holy name. And it doesn't depend on ceremony as such, or ritual. Yeah. And it's free for everybody, so it's quite a different type of revolutionary process. It doesn't require ceremony or anything, you know, or even qualification. Just chant Hare Krishna, and you can start and advance in that way. The only thing is, as I mentioned, that there has to be some shiksha somewhere in there to put the person on the proper with a proper sambandha again and whatever. So therefore we do operate within the sampradaya, Gaudiya sampradaya, and we have a whole set of teachings to go with the chanting of Hare Krishna. So that those teachings are important, and the association and the shiksha are also important. Okay. Well, it's difficult to figure out what the origin of that is in one sense. There is, in Pancharatra, there are some sacrifices you can do. I think in that Bharadwaj Samhita that was circulating around, there was a sacrifice you can do for Vaishnava Pancharatric initiation. There is a ceremony. Also in Hari Bhakti Vilas, there is also a fire ceremony, yagya, etc. But it is quite different from what we do. And in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, generally, they never did a sacrifice for diksha. Even Sri Sampradaya, I don't think they do that one mentioned in the Pancharatra. They do some yagya when they give you your brands or something like that, but it's a different ceremony. So, in general, through the Gaudiya Sampradaya, the whole process of diksha, Vaishnava diksha, where you get your secret mantras, Krishna mantra, is just giving the mantra, finished, and get a name, finished. No ceremony, no yagya, nothing. Yeah, even today. Like in, I asked Krishna Kshetra Swami that how did, because he did the study of the Radharaman temple and the deity worship there, says, how do they do their initiation ceremony? So he said, well, I observed once the Goswami there was giving diksha to somebody. He just called him onto the balcony there and in private gave him the mantra. That was it. It's go away. It's finished. So just give the mantra and go. And we see in Brihad Bhagavatamrita also Gopakumar. The guru came and he gave him his Krishna mantra, a 12-syllable mantra, and then went away. That was it. Just gave him mantra and went away. So, and we find that the Janava Mata, the wife of Nityananda, she gave thousands of people diksha. So in other words, she just gave the mantra to everybody. They didn't go through ceremonies or whatever like that. There's no description of any yagyas or anything at that time. So originally it was like that. And even for Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, the only time they do a yagya is when they get the Brahma Gayatri mantra. They do the Upanayanam yagya, because it's a samskara, and each samskara has a yajna. Usually they have a yajna to go with it, so it's a prescribed yajna with Vedic mantras. So they did a fire sacrifice at that time for that. So how we get it in there in first initiation and in second initiation, I don't know, it's there, but it's not illegal or anything, but we're not really following any vidhi for it also. There's which mantras are flexible, you can put any mantras in there you want probably. And the ceremony for establishing the fire, you just take it out of the Satkriya Sardipika, kind of, out of there, which is the Vaishnava adaptation of the samskaras there. So that, like that, well, the function of it is, it can be there, fire sacrifice can be there, because it's worship of Vishnu also, but actual vidhis and why we do it for Harinam especially is a little bit strange. If we do it for second initiation, fine, if there is ceremonies for that, and also there is the, for the Brahma Gayatri, there is definitely the Vedic fire sacrifice there, but for Harinam, that's quite unusual. Yeah. And when we started doing it, it's so flexible. I think we kind of warped it a little bit here and there, and we've added things to it and whatever. So, you know, there was colors somewhere, throwing colors in the fire someplace and whatever. And then they chant Brahma Samhita in front of it, and, you know, we add a few things onto it. But, you know, it's all just added on later on. We don't have any Shastric reference for any of these things. Yeah, it can. It has an aspect like that, a social thing, but then Harinam in one sense is not a social thing, it's simply an individual chanting of the holy name ultimately for spiritual advancement. It's separate from social things, and if we emphasize the social aspects, then that becomes more like getting initiation becomes a social ritual, which is not what we want it to become, you know. So it becomes again like an external factor that you got initiated, like this. You're not initiated, you're less. So that also becomes a little bit of a little bit materialistic if we start emphasizing the social aspects too much. Yeah?
Well, so when we get
they're not all Gayatri, there's three Gayatri, Guru Gayatri, Gauranga Gayatri, Krishna Gayatri, Kam Gayatri, and the Vedic Gayatri. The other mantras are not called Gayatris, the meter is different. Those are for worshipping the deity, the Mula mantras of the deity.
So the Brahma Gayatri, is that the first one?
Yeah.
So in traditional, say, Hindu society, when they got twice born, that's the Brahma Gayatri?
Yes. Yeah. And then they're supposed to chant that three times a day with the Sandhya Vandana rituals. But as I said, generally the Brahmins do it, the other castes don't really do it much at all. And then among the Brahmins, maybe not all of them do it either. They're more or less traditional. I've seen them written out in almost exactly in one of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's books. Padati, Archana Padati, I think I saw it there. They're kind of, looks like the similar mantras. So those are sampradayic mantras. So apart from the Brahma Gayatri, the others are more or less Gaudiya Sampradaya mantras. And particularly, of course, the Krishna Kam Gayatri is mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And then the 18 syllable mantra is very famous, and that's the one that Lord Chaitanya also got, so that's very sampradayic. The Gaura was mantra, obviously. Lord Chaitanya probably didn't chant it, but yeah, that was introduced afterwards.
Yeah, Maharaj, thank you. First one, I have several questions. The first one is Upanayana. We talked about Upanayana and how the father will give the child Gayatri. I'm coming to see him as a self-made, but the father will give the child Gayatri. In terms of the relevance of this in Islam, how relevant is Islam? We know in some parts of Islam it's actually been instituted as part of the time of the practice of Buddhism. So is it relevant to Islam?
The Gayatri Mantra?
Upanayanam.
Upanayanam. Well, it's only relevance is to preach to the smarter Brahmanas, basically, to show that we're our social status is equal to your social status. That's what it was for Bhaktisiddhanta. And to show that bhakti is superior to all of that anyway. But in that sense, it's not really relevant in the Western world at all, because there are no smarter Brahmins there. And even in India, the smarter Brahmins don't say anything now either, so it's not even relevant in India as far as getting that mantra. So whether you have it or not doesn't really matter as a Vaishnava. We can still worship deity without it.
So it seems like, as you're saying, my love for this thing, it's kind of become more of a social thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But of course that gets mixed up with the whole diksha, because we don't separate, we make the Brahma Gayatri as part of the diksha, and if you don't get the Brahma Gayatri, then you're not initiated kind of thing, which is also not correct siddhantically. So, you know, it's a little bit separate. But then of course the whole initiation ceremony becomes, say, a social thing. First, not only the initiation, but the first, what we call the first initiation, also becomes a social thing. So then it goes on to a little bit of a material level when we do that. So that's maybe the danger of, you know, which is why it was all very like personal and just get the mantra, that's it, finished. So there was no social thing, there's no social status involved in it at all. You're not displaying yourself at all. You're just done, and the guru gives you the mantra, you got it finished, and nobody sees it.
And certainly you see that in this especially amongst younger devotees, now it's quite a social thing.
Yeah. So it's that, yeah, it's, that's not a good thing. It just depends on your faith. And if you have the faith, okay, fine, you do it. But if you don't have the faith, don't do it. You know, it's not because of you. Don't you did it, therefore I do it.
So the same thing about the real thing is when you put the emphasis on siksha.
Yeah.
You're not going to be successful
with that. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I think it goes both ways. The people who give the diksha and also the people that want the diksha. It kind of the people want the diksha because they want to get rid of their responsibility a little bit and stick it all on the guru.
Yeah.
And then the gurus get a little bit of support from the disciples, so it's a financial thing, so like that. So again, it's, you know, it can be dangerous also.
And also you mentioned about the Panchakric picture and mantra that you were calling some of the Vedic Christian mantras. Yet we see in some circles in Islam this old Vedic thing, you know, oh, it's not Vedic, it's not one word.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's your thought on that?
What won't work because it's not Vedic?
If not anything we do, if it's not Vedic, it's not going to work. You know, we should be doing more Vedic things.
Well, Vedic, what do we mean by that? Pancharatrik? Or Vedic? If we're really Vedic, then you have to have the Varnas and all this, and then, you know. But we don't even emphasize that at all as far as Gaudiya is. Even Lord Chaitanya was not much interested in doing all that.
But if you look at the things that are being referred to as Vedic,
mm-hmm.
by many devotees,
yeah.
They have quite a recent history.
Yeah. Or even our Vedic food is not, it's probably Bengali food or... Yeah.
Right. And then you also made a comment about deity worship supporting Radha. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, so obviously the Yuga Dharma, the main shelter for spiritual advancement is chanting the holy name. Yeah? Harinama, Harinama, Vakevalam, like that. But we find that within bhakti we have many different activities we can do. And we can't just isolate ourselves from everyone, so and just work with our chanting. Most people need some other engagement, so therefore we have all sorts of engagement of the senses in bhakti, and one of those is deity worship. And of course in nectar devotion, Rupa Goswami said five are the most, you know, powerful ones, and that includes the deity worship. Well, of course we have hearing and chanting and association devotees living in Vrindavan. These are the five things along with deity worship. So deity worship is also particularly attractive because we have a form of the Lord to worship, and therefore some people have difficulty understanding who is the form of, who is Krishna, or what is his form, or how do I meditate on Krishna. They just have to look at the deity, and then they got an object of meditation right there. And in terms of service, they can actually do active service, not just meditating on some, you know, doing something for Krishna, but you can actually do some service for Krishna, like cook for Krishna, dress Krishna, bathe Krishna, etc. So this gives some, let's say, real practical engagement of our physical body. in devotional service. That's also helpful. So it goes along with the chanting of the holy name. But if we don't chant and we just do the deity worship, then generally we're not going to advance also, because again, we must start thinking of the deity as a material entity again. So it's the chanting of the holy name which gives us our main spiritual advancement. So if we do the holy name along with that, then we're sure to maintain that, keep the deity as a spiritual figure, not a material thing.
So then in terms of trying to introduce deity worship to those who do sadhana to the chanting, how would you encourage it?
Well, probably the main thing for new devotees is don't encourage it. Get them just to chant and see if they can chant properly, and you know, and then get the sammanda again, get the philosophy correct first of all. And once they're at a certain level of steadiness in chanting, and they want some form to concentrate, then we can introduce deity worship. But even then, we don't have to worship. They don't have to worship the deity. They just come to the temple and participate in the programs in the temple where we have deities. And then, of course, if they're a little more advanced and they got some time and they want to engage themselves, then they could have deities or whatever. But it's not necessary in all cases.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting you say that, because often it's the case that when people first come in contact with this ISKCON, uh-huh. sometimes the first thing they do is they get deities.
You know? Which is...
Next question I have. Yoga Vidya is a sign of qualifying the word of Islam with food. But many don't accept this, and we even find within Vaishnavism, mm-hmm. I've had many experiences of it. Even within ISKCON, we find that devotees may think that Westerners, even though they have Brahmin traits, are not actually qualified.
They're not qualified as Brahmins.
It should be on the altar, etc. This is controversy going around about whether we should
get Yeah, I would think probably this is the whole idea, the thing that it goes back to the initiation itself, apart from being a brahminical initiation, just get the initiation itself, the diksha with the mantra. That's supposed to qualify you. But then the guru, he's got all these disciples, who is actually qualified to follow the standards, you know, is up to the standards, doesn't really know, so... You know, it's a matter of who gets the second initiation, who's qualified for that. It's not, there's not a proper way of distinguishing who's actually qualified to worship the deity and who's not. So they just give the initiation based on some recommendation, but we don't look at the, you know, the real qualification of the person for that.
Within ISKCON?
Yeah.
Well, what about, you know, like when we find, like, in other groups, that they don't accept
In any case, different sampradayas have different standards. So even like the Sri Sampradaya, obviously they're not going to allow us to go worship their deities or whatever. Even they don't allow other people in their own sampradaya to worship the deities. Some deities are only by family. It's gone down for generations and you cannot worship those deities. That's called the Vaikunas group. You're only qualified to worship the deity if you come in those traditional families. And if you're another Sri Vaishnava from somewhere else, you cannot even worship those deities. So that's one group of Sri Vaishnavas. Others, if they are initiated Vaishnavas, technically they could worship like that, but they may have a little problem. And then I think there was a controversy with the Balaji that could the Madhavas worship those deities as inter-sampradaya, and I think they allowed them to worship, but there was a little bit of a controversy whether they should or not, you know?
Oh,
I see, okay. Okay. Well, I suppose that's just a matter of prejudice.
And the final thing, I remember years ago you made a comment that you weren't sure whether or not Gopalbhatta wrote the Sattva Sarvadhika.
Yeah, because his name is mentioned as one of in one of the mantras, his name is there. So
you sort of find out.
I've never figured out where the source of that is, but there's also like some of the mantras, the way they do them, they take the Vedic mantra and then they just substitute a name of Vishnu into it instead of a Devata, so it's done a little bit sloppily in some places, so, you know, that's not done quite properly in some places, so.
So is it the normalized text?
Well, it's the only thing we have. In one sense, it's just taking the Samskar book of Samveda, you know, Saka, and then it substituted Vishnu names instead of, you know, Devata names. So, in one sense, okay, we can do the Samskar without having to worship Devata. So, in that sense, it's okay.
I've been asked about where we've dug in something. Over the last couple of years, I've seen people authoritatively state that old thinking were bogies in the Vedic times, as if they lived there and they knew. I think I've said this before, that in 1971, when we saw Prabhupada walking in Calcutta, and you were there too, that everybody in Calcutta, with all the gentlemen, were wearing bogies.
Well, they certainly they weren't wearing pants, we know that. They weren't wearing pants. The brahmacharis, often they would wear a skin, they got a deer skin or something like that. So when they're grasses, then they would take cloth, but it shouldn't be sewn cloth. This is one of the things, no sewn cloth. So it would look like it is some sort of long piece of cloth. And then they also say that it should be trikatcha, so it should have the three folds and the tail on the back. So at least we can say that's a dhoti or more or less like that, and an upper cloth. So that was kind of a standard upper and lower cloth at least. But we see in South India, they often just have they don't have the kacha, they just have a thing like that around. But they do have the upper cloth, and if you don't have the upper cloth, that's also considered bad. So they had two pieces of cloth at least. But no shirts, no sewn cloth. So that was, we can say, is maybe Vedic, whatever. But at least 500 years ago, that was standard, we can say, at least 500 years ago.
Also on the question of pictures, and the importance of pictures. So I think, of course, Srila Prabhupada's like the founder of the chariot, he created this. There might be a sort of dual purpose in the picture also, because there's so many Vedic samskaras that we've introduced some, but we don't really honor so many samskaras, maybe marriage and pictures, certainly one. The idea of the first picture and second initiation
being like a samskar.
The concept of the samskara.
Which
is quite acceptable in other religious institutions, like what they do in the Catholic Christian Church also.
As I said, it has a social aspect, but then maybe the negative point is, if it's too social, then it loses its spiritual aspect. It becomes like a marriage ceremony or some other ceremony instead, and it loses its purely spiritual qualification aspect, which gets a little dangerous also. So anyway, okay, I think we better end here. Hare Krishna.